Chapter 1. Soot and ash, snot and spume, quag and sump and clotted moss. Loam. The boy left the river and the village behind him, and he felt the valley narrow and tighten as he turned up the track, and the trees curled in around him and over him, pulled him in. Into dell and dingle, gulch and gully, mulch and algae. England. Winter had just released its frosted grip on the valley, and the sky was heavy with clouds that dragged themselves across it, like broken animals behind him. The scent of smoke was in the air, but there was none to be seen, only the scud and moil of the clouds and the trees closing in. The rising columns and tangled limbs of birch and beech and ash and alder, the soil soft beneath his clogged soles. He remembered his master Duckett's words, "Keep on the river path upstream, and if anyone asks, you're apprenticed to a woolcomber and running errands from Sorby. Then, when you pass the black mass of trees pressed up against the sky in the distance high up to your left, and the two waters meet, and there are houses and an alehouse called Barbary's, take the packhorse brig and cross the cobbles with the Deathstone looming so large now it blocks the sun and casts the meeting of the two streams in shadow." The boy had navigated the running waters at that bridge and crossed those cobbles and drawn up close to that great jagged black slab of stone lunging out from the trees to pierce the clouds. And he had seen gulls and ravens circling the distant edge of the cliff, and his master had been right, it had blocked the sun. And then he had moved through shadows onto the crag pass, where he was told it was just a short climb up to the sky, to where the king lived. "Hoo-hall barn on your right. Keep going. There, see it. A gap and flinty track. Tek it. Watch your back. You're on your own, boy." As he walked, he thought mainly of what he had seen at sunrise when he had first set out with his pouch and a headful of memorised instructions, his first dead body, swinging in chains from the gibbet high up on Beacon Hill. The white morning sun was still cold, as it had split through the trees and split through the chains in a glorious skyburst that framed the form that turned and creaked in the clear air of the breaking dawn, and already the image was seared upon his memory for life. The day was fresh, but the body was not. There it hung, in a suit of iron custom-crafted to hold its crow-pecked shape for months. The sallow flesh that had long since receded was now a sagging leathered parchment beneath clothes matted and ragged from rainfall and decay. A hanged man. Nails, scores of nails, were driven into the gibbet post to deter people from climbing it to tamper with this grotesque suspension, as they had been known to do, for these were the feckless felons that never made it to burial, and their boots were there for the taking. This man's name the boy did not know, but he believed that the body once belonged to he who had poached and butchered a nobleman's stag. It was said they caught him elbow deep in steaming gizzards as he dressed it out back of his hilltop hovel, the cheeks already boiling in a pot and a haunch blackening in a makeshift smokehouse. Indeed, they said it was the sweet smell of scorching meat that had given him away. Hunger, then, it was that had led this poor soul to the gallows steps, a hunger for warm meat rather than cold-blooded murder. Not greed, but necessity. A stag like that could see a starving family right through a season and then some. No part would be wasted. Every inch smoked and seared, sliced and boiled and salted. The execution had taken place in the dead of night after fax folk had lined the streets in protest at the grim parade that had been promised them. The dragging of the choked body, the fixing of the chains, the second suspension of a man already dead. Killing him once was not enough.